different encounters and awakenings that take place in people's lives. Today, the story of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, and so many different awakenings that happen throughout that story. So we pick it up in John 11, verse 17. It says, "Now when Jesus arrived, he found Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, 'Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know God will give you whatever you ask of him.' And Jesus said to her, 'Your brother will rise again.' Martha said to him, 'I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day.' Jesus said to her, 'I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?' She said to him, 'Yes, Lord, I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world.' When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, 'The teacher is here, and he's calling for you.'" I want to take a moment. We're going to keep going in the story here in a second, but something to highlight here is there's that phrase, "The teacher is here, and he's calling for you." My favorite professor in college, sat in a class in the Gospel of John with him, and he loved that phrase, "The teacher is here, and he's calling for you." He said he thought that's a phrase that should be etched on every pew and every pulpit in every sanctuary. Because whenever we gather together to worship, to study, to grow, to be revived with God's Spirit and life, it's true. This statement is a reality. The teacher is here, and he's calling for you. He's calling out to you and I, and saying, are you here? Are you ready to listen? I've got something to share with you." So I love that phrase. The teacher is here, and he's calling for you, calling for me. So we continue to listen and see, what does the teacher have to say? What's taking place? What's happening? Now when Mary heard this, when she got up and quickly went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him, out on the outskirts, so if you will. And the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out, and they followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. And when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." An echo, exactly what her sister said. Two grieving sisters at the loss of their brother, Lazarus, faced to face with Jesus, and there is that haunting question, that challenge to Jesus. "Lord, if you had been here, Lord, where were you?" Have you ever been disappointed with God? Have you ever been angry with God? ever expressed it out loud to someone else or straight to God. Sometimes I'll have conversations with people who certainly are feeling that disappointment, that loss, that grief, that anger that goes with loss, and yet they're not so sure that's something you can say to God. That's why I love this moment, this encounter. Mary and Martha are dear friends of Jesus. They know him well. And they will pull no punches. They are straightforward. Lord, where were you if you'd have been here? Maybe you've never voiced such thoughts out loud, but maybe you've thought them. Lord, if you'd been there, my mother wouldn't have died. Lord, if you'd been here, my friend, the cancer. Lord, if you'd been here, the divorce. Lord, if you'd been here. So often, and I can only imagine those in the midst of tragedy, particularly this week, Jill held up several. In each of those moments, a bridge collapse, a helicopter crash, and so much else. It's, Lord, where were you? How could this happen? And they're the kind of questions that ultimately Jesus doesn't actually give a response to. He doesn't try to answer it, because a part of the reality of the question is just pain and loss. And God taking it and saying, I get it. I understand and I honor it. I'm not going to brush it away with a simple catchphrase, with a doctrine or a concept. He just lets them share it. I did a memorial service a few weeks ago for a family in the community who their 28-year-old son had died. He'd been in and out of drug rehab, dealing with addiction and the specter of that. And he'd been clean for a while, and they were so hopeful. And then, like that, the addiction caught hold again, and he overdosed and was gone. Lord, where were you? They didn't voice that question, but I said it for them. That's all I could think. Where were you? Our passage goes on and it says, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came out with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus began to weep. And in some translations, this becomes the shortest verse in the Bible, just Jesus wept. And that's God's reply to the answer, really. Where were you? Jesus wept. And it's not a trailing tear. The verb used here in weeping is this sort of deep moaning kind of grief and weeping that is resonates within your body. You've perhaps experienced that kind of weeping before. A lot of images of this moment. This is one you might find conveys it, but at that moment. Jesus is weeping, and there's a paradox here because, I mean, we know the story. It's not long after this, Jesus is going to call Lazarus out of the tomb. He's going to be alive again. And they'll be celebrating and rejoicing, or this miracle will take place. So why the weeping? Why doesn't Jesus say, Mary, don't cry. It's okay. It's going to be better. Have I got an amazing thing you're going to see in just a moment. He doesn't do any of that. He doesn't try to diminish their pain or their grief. He sits in it with them, because that is at the heart of God. That is where God is when we experience loss and pain in life. It may feel that God was absent as we share the question, Lord, where were you? But the answer is Jesus wept. Jesus came alongside Mary and Martha and all the rest who felt God forsaken in that moment, and all he could do with them was reveal the heart of God. God is pained when we suffer loss and grief. God understands that. It's so in contrast with the sort of vision of what God might be like, particularly in the first century, all the competing images of gods in those days. Gods of the Greeks, the Romans, were gods who could care less about humanity. Gods who had no empathy or concern for puny humans. But here, Jesus is revealing God's heart and saying, no, this pains God too. God is right here, weeping. And that's the only response appropriate in the moment. Because words fail in those moments. Words are empty. Explanations don't go anywhere in the midst of loss. They're just hollow. I learned that the hard way. I was in seminary. In the midst of seminary, doing chaplaincy training at a hospital one summer. And chaplaincy training is all about learning pastoral care. How do you come alongside people in the midst of hard moments of life when they're going through cancer treatments and surgeries, when they've just lost a loved one? And so we're learning the different ways of counseling and coming alongside. But there was a night. We had to do an on-call session every week. 24-hour shift, and it was about midnight on one of my on-call nights, staying at the hospital, because you never know when something's going to happen, and the beeper goes off. Still had beepers back then. Yeah. It was from the ER, the emergency room, so sort of splash some water, wake up, and stumble down to the emergency room and find out that what we're waiting on is a call. An ambulance is coming in with an infant in distress. An infant who has already coded, and they're resuscitating, working on this baby. I have, at that point, a 2-year-old at home. This is close and personal. And real. They rush in with the baby, and it's mostly in an ER, not like TV ever displays it, right? But this moment it was. There were personnel from everywhere coming in on this one. Lots of activity, talking, and everybody's working on this child. And her aunt was the one who was watching her that night while her mom and dad had a date night out. And they keep working, and the child dies. 6 months old. And the aunt is wailing like you have never heard. The deep kind of groaning you can only imagine. And the loss of a child. The guilt she feels, like, what did I do wrong? The loss, this little one, the promise of life is gone. And I'm trying to think of anything to say that will somehow ease that moment. But there's nothing. There are no concepts. There are no words that somehow make that easier, that somehow take away that pain. Instead, all I could do was stand there and weep uncontrollably as we shook together, we moaned together, and wailed. It's like 17 years ago. I can still feel that moment. I felt guilty. I felt guilty afterwards. Like, why couldn't I have said anything? Why was there nothing I could do? And yet, what I realized when I look at John 11, when Jesus wept, was that was exactly what God does in those moments. And I wish there were better answers. I wish there wasn't death where infants die in ambulances, when spouses are healed, when there's no loss or mourning or crying. But that's not this world yet. That's the world to come. And so in the midst of that moment, God's there weeping with us. And I take heart in that. And I took heart in it again as I preached at that memorial service for that 28-year-old that we lost as well. And I recognize that it doesn't take away the pain or the loss. That's still very real. But perhaps it awakens us to the reality that God is not far away and indifferent to that pain, but is very present with us in it. Sometimes there just aren't words. There's only the comfort of presence, and that God is with us in that. And our story goes on. It says, now, the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Where was he? Still the question. Couldn't he have done something about this? Perhaps, but it's the reality of the brokenness in the world we live in, is that there is still death and loss. There's still pain and mourning. There's still disease. And we see it around us daily. That's why many of you, as we talk, say, I just don't even turn on the news anymore. It's so disheartening, the destruction and loss that goes on, the anger and fear that's there. And I get that. That's the world we live in. It's not a world where everything works out. In the midst of this world, where bad things still happen, there is Jesus weeping with us, holding us up as we moan and wail. But the story will go on. And this story goes on. It says, now, Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. This was pretty common in those days. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." And Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Well, Lord, already there is a stench because he's been dead 4 days, Lord." King James Version gets it real straight here and says, "Lord, he stinketh," at this point. It's true. Look it up. That's how King James translated that one. "He stinketh." 4 days in a desert climate, you can imagine. Martha is the practical one. "Lord, I don't know if you really want to do that." But he says, "Didn't I tell you, if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew you always hear me, but I've said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. And Jesus said to him, "Unbind him and let him go." So I think Jesus also understood, in the midst of his weeping and being there with their grief and their loss, was that if he's going to say, "I am the resurrection and the life," it has to be more than words. There has to be a demonstration here of that reality, that there is more to come. There will be a new life and a new beginning. And so he calls Lazarus out. And of course, many commentators have said Jesus was very specific here as he said, "Lazarus, come out." Because if he just said, "Come out, dead man," who knows how many would have been walking, coming out of the tombs in the moment. No, he just needed to demonstrate in this moment, there is a power within me, a power that God is working in this world and beginning, and it means there is resurrection, there is new life, and here's a sign of it. Now Lazarus, of course, this is not true resurrection here. He's not in a new resurrected body, as Jesus speaks about later. He's just been raised from the dead. He will die again. His body will fail, but it becomes a sign, a signpost pointing to what God is up to. The resurrection, new life, is happening and beginning there in that moment. It's sort of the way of thinking about, we say resurrection in our mindset is always about sort of heaven. It's later on. And that's how Martha understood it, right? When Jesus said, "Do you believe?" She said, I know resurrection will happen at the end, in the last days. And Jesus said, no. I am the resurrection. It's beginning right here. It's happening little by little. And Lazarus is a sign of it. And in fact, Mary is a sign of it too. I'd never noticed this before, but one of the commentators said that when it says Jesus called for Mary and that she got up and went out to him, the verb used there in the Greek is the same verb used for Jesus coming out of the tomb for his resurrection story. That she, in her grief and loss, is experiencing a resurrection, sort of lowercase r, if you will. Perhaps raising up out of her tomb, out of her loss and grief in the moment. So there are the lowercase r resurrection moments we might experience now. And then there is the uppercase resurrection we will experience when we move from life to death to new life. And that's the promise Jesus gives here. "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live." And of course, the reality is for you and I in this world that continues to have its loss and brokenness and grief. There are lowercase resurrection moments that God is working into our lives, bringing us up out of our depression, bringing us up out of our mourning, helping us to begin again after the job loss or the divorce. And then there's the uppercase resurrection that is to come. All of that is at play and at work because Jesus began that in this moment with Lazarus and Mary and Martha. Most of all this morning, I want us to recognize in the midst of our own tombs, there are the moments where we have that darkness in our lives. We're not alone in those moments, but God is there weeping with us and holding us up, saying there is new life to come. It will be there for you, for me. Oh, gracious God, it's good to hear you are with us in those tombs, Lord. That you cry out to us indeed and call us out. You resurrect us in these days. In little ways and big ways. So Lord, we look to you with our questions, with our doubts and our frustrations, all of which is our honest lives before you. You honor that. You come alongside. Bless us, O Lord, as we do so as well, representing you and your resurrecting ways in this world. I ask in Jesus' name. Amen.